Hi, this is Damon Janis with Eyes on Investors, part of Lifestyles Unlimited, and I'd like to welcome you to today's interview with Jim Ingersoll. Jim is a longtime investor in Virginia, and he has a tremendous amount of experience in flipping houses as well as purchasing homes and renting them out. We had a great conversation. You're really going to like this interview. We covered everything from finding properties to partnering, getting private money. That's a really big one. He gives some really good advice on how to get private money. And if you're looking for money to invest in real estate and don't want to go get money with banks, he's got some good advice for you. So definitely make sure you listen to that part of the interview. We talked about fixing up houses and how do you sell them and lots of great things. Jim was a great guest. Really enjoyed the interview. I hope you enjoy it too. I'm interested in how you got started in real estate investing and just kind of give us a background on what you've done and, you know, how many properties you've purchased. I know you've done several hundred in flips, if I remember right from your website.
Well, I started off when I was really young. My wife and I bought our first house when we got married at 21. And from there, shortly after that, I actually bought a duplex. And had no training whatsoever, and it was really a really tough experience. And it goes back to the point that investing in yourself and getting your education in real estate is really important. So we got through that. I ended up selling that duplex on a land contract to get out of it. Then it took about 10 years off of real estate and came back when the market got really hot and started flipping a house. I was still working full-time at that point. And I started flipping houses here and there and then buying some and holding them as rentals and just kind of eased back in. Then I got to the point where I thought everything looks really good in real estate. I could probably escape my day job and just do this full time. So I started going the wholesaling route.
Now, you're an engineer, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing for your job?
Master's in engineering, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I climbed that corporate ladder to the top to the point that it made me sick anyways.
I'm a software engineer, and I had the same experience. So
okay, great. I understand. So I just, you know, I climbed the ladder, and anyways, I saw wholesaling is a way of generating some pretty easy income, and I started wholesaling maybe in like 2006, 2007 maybe. And it very quickly ramped up my wholesaling business to the point that I did 120 wholesale deals in 2007.
Wow, in just 1 year.
So it was a really busy year. It was 10 per month for a year.
Wow.
And I did that. I was doing bus tours and all kinds of things. Basically, I had to set up as any other business, like an order fulfillment process. People were just telling me the houses that they were looking for, and I would just go out and find them, and I could just sell them just like anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trying to fulfill orders on anything else. And that worked out really good. That's when the market's the opposite of what it is today, because back then financing was super easy and people were getting hard money loans and conventional financing and buying all these houses from you. But the challenge then was that the market was pretty strong, so nobody could find good houses to buy at the right LTV. So that's what I became really good at, was finding the houses that weren't listed and buying them directly across the kitchen table from the owner, and then just wholesaling them away.
Okay.
And that worked really great when financing was easy. As you know, a few years back, the market did a 180, and it became a buyer's market, and credit became really tight, so it was the opposite. And that's when I started flipping houses to first-time home buyers, because they could still get the funding in the conventional financing when investors were getting stuck.
Okay.
So I kind of migrated from primarily wholesaling into flipping houses. And that I do a lot of that. I don't really know how many I'm going to do this year, but you know, over the last 5 years, we have bought and sold probably 200 or 300 houses anyways. Okay. Between wholesaling them and flipping them and buying rentals and things like that.
So you've done a lot of flips. You mentioned that you also have rentals. Do you currently yep. have those, or have you sold those off?
No, I've still got them. I'm adding rentals.
Okay.
I've added, I think, 4 in the last couple of months.
Okay. And so what criteria do you use to decide whether you do a flip or whether you rent it, you know, hold on to it and rent it out?
Well, part of it is driven by my funding, which is, I guess, where we're going with our discussion in a few minutes. But I don't use banks at all. I've completely eliminated using banks for funding out of my investing equation completely.
Okay.
So I don't need or rely on applications. And, you know, as you get a lot of rental property, it becomes a little more complicated because they want copies of leases and they want to know a lot of information about you and a lot of information about all your properties. So about a year ago, I just said, that's it, I'm never going to use banks again. And so getting back to your question, it depends on the funding partner that I'm working with, what their long-term plan is. You know, do they want to use their funding for short-term flips, or are they okay with me tying up their money for 5 or 10 years to do rental properties?
I see.
So once I know what the exit is with the funding that I have set up, then I'll go and find the right property for that.
Okay.
Can find plenty of property for either scenario right now.
Okay. So and I want to get into the funding aspect because, as we were talking about earlier, that's really the biggest area of interest that most people have right now. But before we do that, can you help us understand how you go about finding these properties? I know you've got some wholesale experience.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still kind of following that pattern, or what do you do to go out and get these good deals?
Well, this year I'm buying a ton of foreclosures and REO property. I find especially HUD homes are taking really good discounts this year, so I've been trying to capitalize on HUD houses in particular.
Okay.
But if I'm looking for things like seller financing, then I'll go out and do my own marketing as well. But I'm doing a lot less of my own marketing than I used to. And I used to do about 15 or 20 different things that all worked, and I had tons of lead generation and things.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I kind of pick and choose off the foreclosure market. I'm also finding I can also buy from regional-sized banks direct before they list them with a realtor as well.
Okay.
So I've got some different avenues, but I'm buying mostly cash this year,
mm-hmm.
without banks. So I'm able to buy based on price as much as anything else, which is a lot of times a foreclosure.
And you're going in with cash offers, I assume. So
yeah.
You're making the offer more attractive than if you were borrowing money.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to always make multiple offers when buying from individual owners.
Yeah.
So I took like three offers. One would be a seller finance, one would be a cash, and one might be a lease option or something different.
Okay.
This year I'm buying a lot from banks.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay, well, let's so we talked about finding. So let's talk about how do you get the private funding so you can go buy these deals with cash. I'm really interested in that.
Okay. Well, right now it should be easier than ever because the stock market's down, you know, it dropped 15 points, right?
It sure did.
If people start to get themselves a little bit of a financial education and understand things like compound interest and the difference between somebody losing 15 points in the stock market to just putting it into a CD for maybe 0.4%, or maybe up to 2% if they'll tie it up for 5 or 10 years,
mm-hmm.
and then compare that to what somebody can get investing their funds into real estate, which is, say you even went in at a 6% rate. I mean, that's three times what somebody's going to earn in a CD.
Right.
And frankly, there's a way to do joint ventures and things like that I can provide the people funding me with returns easily of 17% and significantly more at times. So when you start to understand the financial differences using compound interest between, you know, losing 15 points versus earning 1 or 2 points with a CD versus earning 17%, you know, over 20 years, that's that could be a difference of about $2 million for somebody.
Right.
And, you know, not that you want to sound cocky or anything, but, you know, it's good to have some confidence and know what you're going to provide back to that private lender as well, because they need us as badly as we need them.
So there's people out there that have money to invest. They're not happy with CDs and other things they've got. And if you can find them or they find you, you've got something of value to offer them.
Yeah, I can offer them literally, you know, a couple $1 million difference in their bank account over 15 or 20 years.
So how do you,
that's a lot of money.
That's significant, yeah. How do you find these people? Are you just networking and all, or do you have a system of getting in touch with people who potentially have this kind of need?
But I don't think you need all that many of these people. There's a lot of cash that's been moved out of the market, especially over the last week or so. Tons of money moved into CDs earning nothing. And other people have 401ks that are just sitting around that could be turned into self-directed IRAs, and then they can lend you the money. I'm really not looking actively for people. But I think networking is important. I think one easy way is if one of your people listening already has a 401k and they're a real estate investor, they could probably find another real estate investor with a similar amount of 401k money. Both the two investors could roll it into a self-directed IRA and then be private lenders to each other at the exact same terms. See, there's a lot of prohibited transactions in self-directed IRAs, but one of the things you can do is say, I could lend to you, and then you could lend to me. Say we each had $100,000 in a 401k, and we can roll each of ours into a self-directed IRA. I could lend it to you at whatever interest rate, and then you lend yours to me at the exact same terms. Say it's a couple of points and say 8 or 10% interest.
Okay.
That way your 401k grows and so does mine, but it allows us to take that capital and use it in today's market as well.
Okay, that makes sense.
For example, that's probably the easiest way to find your first private lender, is for you to be willing to lend to somebody else and maybe you at the same terms.
Okay, that's a great idea. In fact, I know somebody in our group here in Houston that told me a few weeks ago that he found somebody and they've set up some kind of system like that.
Sure.
That was the first time I've heard of it. So what you're saying really confirms that. That's a great tip that our listeners are going to
benefit. That's probably the easiest way to get your very first one if you have some kind of a 401k or a pension or something.
Right.
Well, think it may be difficult to roll that into a self-directed IRA, but you're in Houston?
Yeah, Houston.
Okay, I mean, I use Entrust Group, which is Quincy Long. He's located right in Houston.
Yeah, in fact, I interviewed him a few months ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all the way down in Virginia, but I know Quincy pretty well.
Uh-huh.
And I really love his group and his team. So, you know, he's my custodian of mine, and I love lending mine out as well.
Yeah, oh, that's great.
He's got mine, and I highly recommend the Entrust Group out of Houston. They do a great job.
Yeah, I agree. I was very impressed with them as well. So if you do, let's say you go find somebody who has money, not doing the 401k thing like we've been talking about, but a different scenario, what kind of agreement do you make with a person? Like, the minute that they lend you the money, do you start making the payments to them, or is it more tied to a particular property?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a paradigm shift in your thinking, because when you go to the bank, you're used to them giving you a loan application and telling you what the terms of the loan are, the amortization, the interest rate, how long it is. But when you're working with a private lender, all that stuff's just a blank sheet of paper. And you need to start to get comfortable with constructing a win-win transaction. And it, you know, it depends. Every person I work with may want something a little bit different.
Right.
So, you know, there's basically two types of financing. Some people are going to want debt financing, which is points and interest like a bank. Other people may want a piece of the equity. So you may be able to give them 30 or 50% of the upside equity of a house in exchange for making any mortgage payments.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because it would seem like some investors would be more interested in just getting cash flow or a return on their investment.
Right.
You know, others would be interested more in equity and maybe some both. So I guess what you're saying is, depending on who you're working with, you'll need to structure a deal that works for you and works for them.
Yeah, that's right. So you got to, you know, kind of customize what you're doing and become comfortable with terms of financing, and know the difference between debt financing and equity financing.
Okay.
Utilize both to make people happy, but the returns are really strong either way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But no, I personally, when I do these loans, I don't make any mortgage payments. I also get 100% of my renovation funds up front.
Yeah, that was another thing I wanted to ask you. So you're borrowing enough from the person you're partnering with to buy the property, to fix it up, all of those costs. So and you're not putting any of your own money into these deals typically, is that right?
That's my goal, yes, to use none of my own money. My return is infinite, but I do all of the work. Their return is, you know, significant, but not infinite. But they're completely passive, and they do none of the work.
Yeah.
Like the catalyst in the deal, I'll go out, I'll find the house. I've got a construction company, so we'll fix it up, and we'll either rent it or sell it. I do all of the active parts of the deal. And that person, though, I expect them to fund it at closing, the acquisition, the closing costs, and the repairs up front. And then I make no, generally, I make no mortgage payments. Unless I'm doing like a long-term rental, and then what we'll do is we'll typically split up the rents, or I'll make them a low interest payment every month.
I see. So on the flips that you're doing, they'll put the money up front, you'll fix the house up,
yep.
And then when you sell it, then is that when you distribute the money back out to your partner?
Yeah, if I'm doing points and interest, then it's interest accruing, so I've got no monthly commitments.
Okay.
And we both get paid at the same time. If we're sharing equity, then we just do a payoff letter, and they get paid at the same time I do as well.
I see.
When I do rental properties, I'm using a joint venture agreement, which specifies typically it'll either be, again, interest or it'll be an equity share where we take the net rental income and we share that every month. And then at the end, when we someday sell it, we'll share the upside equity as well.
I see. Okay. That makes sense.
That's all.
Yeah, this is really helpful information, Jim.
Good.
I appreciate it. Let's see. On the... So let's talk a little bit then about what advice would you have for somebody who's just getting started and maybe doesn't have a track record yet where they could go to a potential investor and say, hey, you know, here are the returns that I can get you. How would you recommend that somebody get started if they don't have any track record?
Yeah, well, I mean, first, if they have a 401k, then they could offer to trade that off with another investor looking to do the same thing. That's really the easiest way. Somebody just starting is going to have to start to get their team in place, you know, make sure they've got the connections in the real estate world with the right professionals. So at least they can go back and say, you know, I haven't really done this very often, but here's the people that I do work with. And maybe offer the person the chance to call them or something like that.
Yeah.
Try to verify credibility. The biggest thing you got to overcome is probably the fact that you're not going to create like a Ponzi scheme or something like that. More so than lack of experience,
right?
In my opinion. And you know, once you've got your private lenders, you need to take really good care of them. I treat them better than I ever would a bank, anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, they're putting up their personal finances, and it's a lot of responsibility for a real estate investor to really secure and do all the paperwork right and protect their interests.
Yeah.
Because once you do that and you provide a good return, they're going to want you to use that money over and over and over again. You know, probably free up more funds for you as well.
Yeah. You know, that you're hitting on a topic that's interesting to me personally, because one of the reasons I haven't gone out and gotten private money from individuals is my parents did real estate investing in California while I was growing up, and they kind of scripted me to not do partnerships with people, like not take other people's money, because if a deal goes bad, it's problematic. So they've always done their own thing, and I think, well, you know, that works, but I could see my wealth growing much quicker if I were to go do the private money this way. So what would you say to somebody like me who's kind of afraid to take people's money and mm-hmm. take that kind of responsibility on?
I would say, you know, if you're an honest, credible person, you should have no fears at all. As long as you have some experience in the real estate marketplace, you're going to do just fine. I mean, I'll, again, go back to my comment that there's a big difference between 1% or 2% interest and say a 15 to 20% return annually compounded over 20 years, I almost feel like I would be cheating some of these people out of literally a couple $1 million over 20 years. How can I not help them build their wealth while they're helping me succeed in today's marketplace?
That's a great way to look at it.
It's mutually beneficial. There's risks both sides.
Right.
But again, when I'm the real estate investor and I'm not lending, you know, it's my responsibility to make sure I get all the paperwork right and everything's secure and put away properly for them. But remember, I also like to be on both sides. So you may want to try lending money yourself first and understand, you know, how it feels to be a lender. Because I would say as many houses as I've bought over these years and as much as I love buying houses, I think I would like lending money all the time more than just buying all these houses because it's passive.
Exactly.
Passive. I mean, I'm working a lot every week right now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to touch on that, too. Do you have a team of people that's helping you do the stuff? I mean, you've got finding properties, you've got the acquisition. You said you have a construction company, so that does the fix-ups. If it's a rental, do you have people that are renting it out, or are you doing all these things yourself?
Yeah, really, it's just my wife and I, and my kids are helping me over the summer while they're home from college. And that's really, I have people like my father-in-law help me a little bit every week. And I have people that will kind of come in and out. But my wife does a lot of the bookkeeping and office work. And my father-in-law will pinch hit and help me with some property management. He can get people to sign leases or show them houses. And I'm not a realtor, so I've got some realtors that will help me get stuff listed and sold, even though I do my own marketing when I sell as well.
You talk about that in your book on the selling side, that you can, if you do want to list with an agent, you might be able to work out like a flat fee kind of deal so they can list it up on the MLS and market it for you.
Yes, you'll save thousands. Yeah, I don't ever pay 3% listing commission.
Gotcha.
I just pay flat fees. That's exactly what I do, and it saves thousands out of every single house.
Yeah.
But also, you know, my realtor will do, even though they're listing it at a flat fee, they'll still do marketing on my houses.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can create buyers that way.
Right.
And I'll do all those things I listed in my book. I do them all the time every week. Craigslist ads, YouTube videos, social media, and things like that. And I think it really helps get houses sold and rented fast, he said.
Yeah. Yeah, while we're talking about it, the book is called Investing Now, An Insider's Guide to Flipping Houses for Income Today. And when we were preparing to do this interview, I went ahead and bought it. I bought the Kindle version.
Good.
And it was a really good read. You did a great job explaining things very clearly and just some real practical information in there. So I encourage our listeners to go get that and read through it, especially if you're looking at flipping houses. It's a great, great resource there. So thanks for putting
it. When I first got into real estate, like I said, when I kind of came back in, the market was really strong. There were all kinds of real estate books coming out. When the market tanked, as the media calls it, the market actually got a lot better for all of us investors, but nobody put books out anymore.
Right.
And that's kind of what led to me writing that book. It's like, I don't have any new ones to read, so I went ahead and wrote one.
Wrote one for yourself, by yourself. Yeah.
Yep.
It's a great read. So when you're, we talked about finding, financing. Let's talk about fixing up the properties.
Okay.
What's a good approach to take if you're doing a flip to make sure that you don't spend too much money, you're getting it done for the right price, that sort of thing?
Well, it's important to develop a really strong contracting team that you can really trust. And in my book, I talk about how to find contractors. But I've got a construction company, so it's pretty easy for me. I'm a Class A contractor as well. But the important thing is to build your team and to get their input as you go through it, because they'll help you save time and money. Price, quality, and time are all really important. And you've got to really push to get all three, because I want to get through our houses fast. I want to do the right renovations and get it done, you know, and provide a good quality product for the end buyer. And all three are really important. And, you know, it kind of depends on the neighborhood and the other houses around it as far as your selections. And but if you're first starting the office, is whether you're an experienced flipper also. There's a lot of considerations there.
So are you looking at any particular, like, would you flip a high-end house, or are you trying to keep on the lower side where there might be more buying demand? Do you consider that as you're looking at this?
I do, yeah, I do. I'm looking for primarily first-time homebuyers. So in our market, that could be from a retail price of, say, $120 up to maybe $220.
Okay.
And try not to exceed that, because I want the largest pool of possible buyers. So neighborhood is really important. I always say choose a neighborhood that you feel comfortable when your teenage daughter is going to at night. It's kind of my litmus test. I've got two teenage daughters, so... Now, if I'm comfortable sending them to that house at night, it's probably a good neighborhood for a first-time homebuyer.
Right. That's a great rule of thumb. That's great. I've got a 22-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old daughter, so I can Yeah, I picture that perfectly.
Yeah, you understand.
Absolutely.
Same goes when you're buying rental property, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So let's see. I'm interested in some stories that you might have. You've done so many properties. I'm sure you've got some good stories of maybe some. What's the worst property you've seen and most, or maybe the most interesting turnaround that you've had on a flip that you've done?
I've done some really extensive flips. When I was wholesaling, I saw some of the worst houses and the worst parts of the ghetto. I've walked into houses that looked like a bomb went off inside. And I talk about this in my book a little bit, but, I've walked into houses that are supposed to be vacant, and you walk inside and find people in them. You know, that can be a little frightening at times. Could be a squatter. It could be somebody doing drugs. You got to be a little bit aware if you're going into vacant houses alone. Mm-hmm. I've seen all kinds of animals and dead animals, everything from dead cats to fleas and bees and snakes. So, be aware. And I've fallen through floors and I've done a lot of stuff. Found the wrong house.
Yeah, I think I remember in your book you mentioned you went onto the porch of a house and you fell through the porch
where
the wood was rotting down.
I did, and I went to one house to meet with the buyer in this was really a rough area when I was wholesaling, and this guy comes to the door shirtless. First I knocked on the door, nobody answered, so as usual I just walk in because I go to a lot of vacant houses, and next thing I know he comes running in the living room, the shirtless guy, and he's yelling like, "What are you doing in my house?" So anyways, yeah, there's probably a lot of stories if I think about it, and different ways to get in houses and how to get out of them.
Make sure you're always knowing, you always know where the exit is in case somebody's there and didn't expect it.
Yes, but be careful on the stairs because you can fall through.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So do you have any plans to do multifamily, or you're comfortable with the single family and what you're doing?
Yeah, I've wholesaled a lot of multifamily, and that's what I'll continue to do when I get it. But yeah. I'm more of a single family home guy. That's the SF class that I'm most comfortable in. I've personally had some multifamily, and it's a little more work for me than single family. I find the tenants are a little more come and go, and a little more maintenance. And when I'm renting, I really want somebody to come in, preferably a family, and stay for multiple years, really, and just kind of leave me alone, pay the rent on time, and take care of the place, and everybody's good,
Yeah,
that's landlord's dream, but I can't quite get there with multifamily, so I'll become more of a single-family guy.
More single-family. Yeah.
That's my preference at this point.
Okay. So where do you, and what's your vision like for, say, in a year from now or a couple of years from now? Where do you have kind of a sense as to where the market's going, what you'll be doing?
Well, I think we're at the bottom now, and I think we'll be at the bottom for a while. So anybody who can buy and hold right now, anywhere near the bottom, you should be set for life when it starts to turn up. I think when it starts turning up, it'll be too late. By the time people talk about the market turning up, you'll have missed the best part of it. So buy and hold right now would be a good time. My goal is to get a group of houses paid off completely and have no mortgages on them and just live off the rent.
Yeah.
It's kind of my long-term goal.
Okay. So when you can buy and hold, that's really your preference over flipping.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense. We help people flip in Lifestyles Unlimited, but we recommend buying and hold if they can because you get the tax advantages, cash flow, and things like that.
Yeah, that's really my long-term preference.
So let's see, it's August of 2011. So I'm just saying this for people who are watching this maybe in a few months from now, but do you feel like there's another year or two of opportunity to be buying these properties, or is the window starting to close, do you think?
No, I think it'll be here for a year or two.
Yeah.
Which is good for everybody in real estate investing right now.
Yeah.
And, I think it'll be here for a couple of years.
Excellent.
I think the shadow foreclosure inventory numbers are really strong. I think, we're coming through kind of a Fannie Mae moratorium right now. And when that's lifted, I think we'll have more opportunity on foreclosures in the very near future. So I think it'll be here for a good while.
Excellent. Well, we've covered a lot of stuff here, and this you have been so the quality of the content you've given is really awesome. So
I've enjoyed it.
It's been wonderful. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to share with people, or
I just encourage people to get over that four-letter word fear. Don't be afraid in this market. It's probably the best chance of your entire generation to make it happen right now. So just do it and don't be afraid. Just move on. It's still tough.
That's great words of advice. And so we'll leave the interview there. I just want to refer people again to your book, Investing Now, An Insider's Guide to Flipping Houses for Income Today. And your website is investingnownetwork.com.
That's right.
And, in fact, I went out to your blog this morning, and you've got some really good articles out there. So I recommend our listeners go take a look at that and connect with you.
Great.
So thank you so much, Jim. It's been
great. All right, nice connecting with you. Best of luck, Dan.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.